Wat dit van mij. On the following week with the briefing on the corporate strategy by the Department of Trade and Industry. The following week will be the briefing on the implementation of the Industrial Policy Action Plan 2, which is very important. Now we've seen that we've got 2 weeks that deal with the select or the economic development. Wednesday 9 March workshop on the African Charter, you remember when there was a briefing, we did say to the department to want this workshop so that we understand what the charter is. And any other charter. Then on the 15th to the 18th of March, there's a proposed Northwest Province Oversight visit. And the last item would be the NSOP Provincial Week, which is 21st to the 25th. I don't know why it is said 21st, because the 21st is a holiday. Should be the 22nd after the 25th. So this was our draft program. Can anyone comment? Then can we then have a proposal, if there's no comment, that Honorable Mguni.
Chairperson, I propose for the adoption of the program.
Does that mean we delete 1 to 4 February?
Positive. Hello, Sinclair.
Okay, I just want to pose a question of clarity. I received the email from the committee section regarding a invitation for a workshop regarding free trade zones in Tanzania. And but it seems I was the only one. If that's the case, I just want to table it here and to find out if it's the right committee. And if it's the right committee, then I just want to suggest that we also put it on the agenda for the possibility to build it into the program.
I'm not aware of it. Maybe we can check other members if they are aware of it. Maybe it's those invitations that come, you know, individually. From time to time. I also do get invitations that come to me personally, and either I accept or but the Honorable Sinclair, can we follow that up so that if it really there is something like that and we have the facts, then we can see what we can do about it. Can we ask Lupera to deal with it? Check with Committee Secretary and with you, give that information, and we'll follow it up. But under normal circumstances, if really it needs to warrant the attendance of the committee, it would have come to the committee. But as a matter of interest, if we do have an interest, sometimes we do make applications if we are interested in taking part somewhere. So let's get that information with the press. Then we'll consider if that can be done just today, so that when we finalize the program, we'll finalize it today. In principle, before it's being submitted forward, then we're clear. Then we'll communicate with other members. Is there any Mazamban?
Just a question of admin. Mr. Chairman, once the program's been finalized, is it possible for the committee secretary to send out an Outlook, Microsoft Outlook invitation so it automatically goes into our calendars? And then we can, you know, we can respond if we need to. But what is happening is that these schedules go out, and then we've got to transcribe everything either into our diaries or those of us who are using Outlook calendar into the calendar. And it'd be great if the secretary could just send out those notice emails that are so powerful. Thank you.
I hope it's clear to the committee secretary. Any comment, because the first thing we heard was a proposal that we adopted on a proviso that we also come to get this information. Honorable Dikgale.
Mine is a question, Chair President. I don't think it's proper on the program. I want to know when are we going to Limpopo. Thank you.
No, it will be coming. We cannot visit all in one term all provinces. It will be coming. And maybe in the second term, you know, it will assist us.
Thank you. I think we must go to Limpopo when it's a bit cooler. I second the proposal, but say, just the last line, the 21st starts on a Monday, not on a Wednesday. So, you know, I see here Wednesday, 21 to 25th. But March.
Maybe it's supposed to be Wednesday with the date wrong.
The provincial week starts on a Monday. So I'll second that. But say, we must also look then to if I may, Chair, with your permission, find out when we can visit some of the other or areas, or maybe when our things are approved, that the two secretaries get together, and we might have on those two visits of economic development joint visit, because also taking into consideration the new Kuha IDZ zone and those trade ports in PE, what we heard yesterday, as well as the London trade port and IDZ, maybe we can slot that in with the two committees having a joint oversight then. On those visits to the Eastern Cape and KZN.
That's fine. Do you have another point, Donald Sinclair?
Yeah. Chair, I just want to suggest that we go to Limpopo once scope has sorted out these things, then we need to what approach to take. But I also want to put on the program formally a request that we visit the project that's called the Lake Gariep Initiative, is an initiative between the three provinces of Northern Cape Free State and Eastern Cape. And I understand that it will be later on the program, but I think it's really something that we must investigate and interrogate, because it seems that government intends to spend a lot of money there.
No, that's fine. Except that the first comment, if we were to wait for COPA, which means we won't go to Limpopo. But the Lengharip one is a good one. Funding it?
Mr. Chair, I see on the 9th of March, the second item there is adoption of minutes and reports. Can't we do that every week that we have a meeting? It seems as though we do it once a term, and we forget what we have done and what we have said. If it's done on a regular basis, then it's fine. But you know, when you have a ANC branch meeting, you go and you the next meeting the minutes must be read, and the report must be on the table. And whether you take 2 weeks or 3 weeks to write the report, the time that you're going to spend writing the report is exactly the same. So if you don't do it now, why will you do it? And that's when it becomes a mountain. We'll just be so much more efficient if we do it on a regular basis. And I'm sure that not even the ANC would object to it. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Fundy. I wasn't aware that you know so much about the ANC and writing of minutes and so on. Yeah. No, that's fine. But the reality is, the fact is, we need to improve on that. But to be honest, a week here in Parliament, I know what they do, might be too short. Maybe we'd say fortnightly. It's quite reasonable. Because when they write minutes here, I think they send them to that office committee section. Then it comes back. Then it goes back. Maybe if we could have a minimum of 2 weeks, then we approve minutes. Any other comments? So we've done with this now. Adopted provincially, so we'll communicate with the additions. So we'll start with our formal meeting. With the presentation from the department. Welcome to the DDG and Entourage, and to everybody. We are going to introduce ourselves. Starting from myself towards my left, I'm Dumisani Gamete, the chair of the Trade and International Relations from KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hlupheka Mtsileni, and I'm the committee secretary for this committee.
Good morning. Aaron Mguni from the Free.
Good morning. My name is Beth Abraham from Gauteng. Thank you.
Morning, I'm Elza Finlingen from the Eastern Cape, where tourism is good.
Alfie from KZN, where tourism is better.
Freddie Adams from the Western Cape, where tourism is excellent.
Good morning, everybody. I'm from the mighty power province of Limpopo, where Julius Malema and all the powerful leaders are coming from. My name is Masoko. Thank
you. All the powerful decisions have been taken. Kenneth and Clay Northern, gentlemen.
Colin Marina Northwest.
Freedom to the Federal Committee.
Abdullah Khanis, the researcher.
Zinifri from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
I'm Peter Kutsir, Parliamentary Officer for DELCO.
From Belga.
Johan Duran, Parliamentary Officer.
Mujahid Siyabi from the Department of Tourism.
Baki Matebula from the National Department of Tourism.
Morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Victor Tarage. I'm DDG responsible for policy and research in the department. These two colleagues, I don't believe they actually introduced themselves because the honorable members should have a sense of what their responsibilities are within the department as well.
Apologies. My name is Baki Matebula, Director, Policy, Development and Intergovernmental Coordination in the Department of Tourism.
Okay, my position is Chief Director, Policy and Monitoring and Evaluation. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And there's a new honorable members, parliamentary officer from DECO, and COPA, is somewhere now in Pretoria. You'll meet him somewhere when you go around overseas. I think he's doing some training there. So now, so that is why Mr. Kutsi comes from DECO, has taken over as a parliamentary officer. So he'll give him a detail. Should you need anything, he'll also give you a detail so that you contact him. DDG, thanks very much for coming. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chen. We've got a few slides, but we will try and elaborate more in terms of what is in the background. The first thing that we looked at when we got the topic, we must confess, we realized that it's a topic that we can do a whole lot more, but within the time constraints, we said, let us at least focus on the core, what tourism's alignment issues would be across the spheres horizontally and also vertically. We first looked at the fact that it actually is constitutionally mandated to both provinces and also to national in terms of policy and also in terms of legislative responsibilities. We looked at some of the instruments that are there. We've got a white paper of 1996. We've got a Tourism Act of 1993. But I must say that it is the very act that currently we have revisited because it predated the Constitution, first and foremost, but it also did not necessarily provide for a whole host of other things that were actually later on in the 1996 white paper. So we're trying to make sure that there is proper alignment and implementation thereof. Now, we are also talking about the national strategy, which will be going to Cabinet in March for final approval for purposes of us getting to implement it. It is aligned to the 1996 white paper. But also it takes into account the current environment within which tourism actually operates. The issue with local government also is that legislative mandates they do not have. They don't have regulatory powers. But we should look at the fact that there are things that they do, which pertain, for instance, to their bylaws, that when done will either positively or negatively implicate the mandate of tourism. Typical example, if, for instance, we have a decision on rates, someone who is actually providing services to the tourists would have to carry those rates over and actually pass them on, and somebody must actually pay for that ultimately. So it's basic things like that, and some of the decisions that would have been made would then have an impact as well. And the other structures that are provided for, obviously, by the IGFR. But what we tried to do was to say, let's look at the different functions, and then let's talk about what kind of alignment within that particular function takes place. Now, if we were to look at the research and the information area, the National Department has a responsibility over this in terms of setting a broader framework across the country to say, this is what we should be doing in terms of what tourism research is. This is what we should be doing in terms of what the knowledge management agenda should be. But local government has direct responsibility also in terms of the signage. They've got direct responsibility in terms of the information centers that are actually there. Now, how do we actually get the alignment all together? We have got some research technical committee which actually has members that are actually coming from the provincial government and also from SAUDA. And this is where we actually deliberate on the research agenda overall to say these are the specifics that we should focus on to be able to enrich whatever developments will be done at a later stage. Now, we also talk about how do we gather all this information. At a national and provincial level, we've got tourist guides registers. But when we look at these registers, which is something we addressed last year, when we look at these registers, the registers would actually simply be provincial registers. But what we want to move to, which is what we brought in last year, was we should be able to actually locate where these particular registers, where this particular entry into the register is. So if we are talking about a particular district municipality, we should be able to tell this district municipality has got X number of guides. These are the specific areas within which they guide, whether it's cultural or history and so on. And we will then be able to take that, and if someone is looking for a particular guide in a particular area for a particular opportunity, we can map that with the establishment and say, we have got these guides here, this is the number of guides here, attractions, we've got this number of facilities, and so on. So we need local government for that, because this is where everything actually happens. This is where those people are. This is where you can actually be able to update and so on and be able to gather more information from that level. Provinces also, they actually have products and operators, databases, but it's like the provinces. Mpumalanga has got a legislation that compels the registration is mandatory. KZN, registration is mandatory. Limpopo, I'm told there is a legislation that was passed in December, which makes it voluntary. But all this is because what we need to do is to have a national framework. And that national framework, we can then all work through that particular framework to be able to decide on what then would be the provincial dynamic dimension and so on. In the area of planning, strategy and budgeting and so on, the National Department has got the responsibility to draft the national strategy. The alignment integration is brought about when we go to MINMEC, where the minister and the MECs then discuss this strategy and agree on the details of the strategy. They are then able to own the strategy so that the implementation of that particular strategy does not become a national department's sole responsibility, but it becomes a strategy that is implemented throughout. Now, SALGA also is a member of MIPTEC and MINMEC. MIPTEC being a technical committee that is a director's general and HOD's committee that supports MINMEC. At the level of MINMEC, there is a councillor from SALGA who's actually a representative there, and at the level of officials, there's also representation. So that is how the strategy gets to be integrated into the provinces and also into the municipalities. But there is also, through PAKI, there is also a dedicated effort to actually go out to municipalities and make sure that these things are actually known. And then this is also done through participation during the IBC. The department has been participating in this. And also participation in the development of provincial growth and development strategies One thing that perhaps one should mention here, with the provincial growth and development strategy, this is some work we were doing. And what we found out was it becomes a priority, and it has been pronounced as such. But when it comes to the resource allocation, sometimes it's not really at a priority level. And of course, honorable members know that at the provincial government level, tourism is a function amongst other functions within a particular department. So that also leaves bulk of work actually going to the marketing authorities. And in some instances, they would even be policy work that begins to overlap also into the marketing authorities and so on. So that is one area that really going forward we need to look at closely to say can marketing authorities then drive elements of policy and vice versa. Now at national government level, the department is a member to the economic sectors and the employment cluster, and also the international relations cluster. Now, this is why ultimately the department actually was able to drive getting tourism as one of the pillars in the emerging growth pathway document. And again, it is the reason why it managed to get tourism as one of the core pillars of the international strategy that was also launched. Now, there is also specific bilaterals that are held with individual departments. Some are done at DDG level, some are done at DG level, some are done at minister's level. But the purpose of this is to actually bring about the specific elements of tourism functions, the dependencies that we don't necessarily have control over. For instance, it would be issues pertinent to transport. We would have bilaterals with the Department of Transport, but also bilaterals with the Department of Public Enterprises from the SAA perspective, and a whole host of other departments. But it becomes an issue-based discussion, which becomes a bilateral type of arrangement. Then we've got on policy development. Of course, provinces also develop policies and national develop policies, but the most important thing is that there's got to be an alignment, which is the reason why such policies are brought to this particular committee specifically, to ensure that there is that specific alignment between the provinces and national. But MINMEC remains the clearing house for all these policies. So before any policy is actually out there, even before we actually take it to cabinet, there's a discussion that takes place at MINMEC level, which then takes this particular policy and agree, and they would then recommend that it can then go to cabinet. And the municipalities, we consult them via SALGA. One of the issues that we are working on, these colleagues can elaborate more on that, we are looking at a coherent approach to local government support. What happens is that often it would be this particular municipality or that particular municipality. And one of the needs that we identified was we must actually do a proper audit to say which municipality really is about tourism, because there are municipalities out there that may not necessarily be viable in terms of tourism. And they've got things that they're very good at. So the focus should then be on areas where we're going to optimize and be able to yield a lot more. But these colleagues, together with SALGA, and then the DBSA are doing some work in terms of trying to find out how coherently can we actually work with the municipalities. This includes expansion of their toolkit, which would then also allow for modules that will assist with asset management, tourism asset management. And the argument they were making also was it shouldn't be simply that because that is an establishment that is there, we're just talking about that establishment, or we're just talking about that particular product. It has to include how do we get to this particular place, the signage side? Do we have the necessary information centers? Do we have the necessary information brochures and so on? And those kind of dynamics. But they will be able to probably talk more about that. I've made mention of the issue about the bylaws. Now, it's a very challenging area for us to deal with. But one of the things that we said could be done as part of this exercise that I was talking about is that they need to take what is tourism overall and what it actually means when it comes to passing of a particular bylaw. So that it's a generic thing that people then can tick and say, well, when it comes to this, we have looked at that dimension, we have looked at that dimension. But it is so broad because, I mean, one of the things that we discussed was we have got cross-border products. If we look at the Kruger National Park, it's a Limpopo Mpumalanga product. Now, if a particular municipality that borders within and has got a particular bylaw that contradicts another bylaw within the other side and so on, and there was no talk between the two municipalities, and all I do is I enter into the facility from the other side and I will get out from the other side, but I'm already in a different zone altogether and these different bylaws applying and so on. So there are issues of that nature which we really need to find a way to deal with such, but without with the understanding that this is a mandate that municipalities have, but what are the things that they must check when they actually decide ultimately in terms of what will be the negatives and what will be the positives. Of course, the decision ultimately is going to be for that particular municipality as per the mandate. In terms of product development, honorable members are familiar with the social responsibility program, which is part of the expanded public works program, and it does provide from time to time where viability has been tested, funding for establishment of products and so on. Honorable members are also familiar with the tourism enterprise partnership, which focuses on supporting SMMEs. But of course, its limitation is that it has got specific limits. There's conditions, 2 years in business, and so on and so forth, similar to the scheme that DDI has, which also has got conditions. One of the conditions is that one must have a bank account that shows that there's been transactions and there's been some business going and so on. One case that we had, which was very, very interesting, was some person who wanted to establish a B&B in Rustenburg. He had a house which was fully paid for, but this house then got mortgaged so that he could then use the money to rebuild this thing, refurbish it, and so on. He rezoned and everything was done properly, but he was using a personal account. So he took the money directly from the bank into his own bank account, personal bank account, and he transacted throughout. He completed everything. Then he went to DCI to say, can I then submit my things? And they said, well, where is the account? And he says, the account I've been using is mine, and it's not a business account. So they couldn't actually assist at that point, and they said he will need to rebuild whatever he has started from the beginning in terms of his own account and so on. But at the end, it shows that there are things that we actually put into these conditions that they actually stifle business, because that could have actually been a person who would have been able to access this and continue with business properly. But it talks to what are the non-financial support mechanisms for small businesses, particularly at that particular level. Because if we don't have those, then we have got a big challenge, which is why the DBSA, together with the other developmental financial institutions, they are going to have a workshop to discuss this particular issue. How do you then facilitate support that is of non-financial nature and make sure that there is still viability for these particular businesses. The local government, other issues that I wanted to allude to is the issue about licensing. We see it as a big opportunity, but we don't have mechanisms to be able to collect this information as yet. At national, the database that we've got, it's of a voluntary nature. And people have actually registered with South African Tourism. They have been able to bring their information and so on and so forth. But if we go to the local government, everyone that actually does business there is actually licensed to do business within that particular municipality. And we are saying, even if we were to get this list handwritten, it would assist. But it would require that each municipality has got a person dedicated to the function. But when we looked across, we found that the scope of work of a person that is a tourism officer in this municipality and scope of work for this other one, they are totally different. And those are things that we're talking about rationalization, and those are some of the challenging areas. In terms of, I've spoken about these three schemes. Quality assurance, we've got one grading system in as far as government is concerned. I'm aware that there's other schemes like AA and so on. But when we're talking about the Tourism Grading Council, that scheme applies across throughout. Now, what currently has been put in place is that we have got provincial assessors. Some provinces share assessors, but we've got provincial assessors that are then able to actually coordinate on the ground. But the final assessment, the issuance of whether this is a 3-star, 2-star, 1-star, and so on, is actually done at a national level. That is complete alignment. It's very, very clear. But we are highly dependent on local governments in terms of making sure that there is proper infrastructure, health and safety issues, and so on, because those are also additional to the quality dimension that we're talking about. Now, on the marketing side, what has been happening? There is an annual gathering of ambassadors per block from the side of DIRCO. And SAT actually goes to that particular meeting. It gets the opportunity to actually present in terms of what the strategy is, but it also gets an opportunity to interact with them and get to understand better the specific environment within which the various excellences are actually working. There's also training that is provided to locally recruited agents that from the DIRCO side that actually work within the tourism terrain. And it looks at getting to know the country clearly, to the extent that if I see a big board there and it is Mangaliso, I must not start thinking, I should just know this is Mangaliso and the story behind it. So there is that training that goes into this, but also the training that goes into the actual strategy. How do we want to get the markets? Who do we work with in terms of the operators that are in that particular area and so on and so forth? Now, the other aspect which is very important is that the marketing strategy goes through the MINMEC. And there's a marketing working committee which comprises of all the CEOs of all the marketing authorities within the provinces, together with the CEO of the chief marketing officer of South African Tourism. But this particular body allows for the sign off of the overall strategy. Is are we focusing on the right things and so on and so forth? And the representativity in terms of do we think we have covered South Africa the way it should be covered? Are we sending the correct message about the country and so on and so forth? Then there's a whole issue of communications. We don't issue statements abroad as tourism. That is done via the GCIS. So those statements are actually signed off. This is a proper process to deal with those kind of things. There's very close working relationship with the INC, particularly when it comes to brand issues, to the extent that some of the campaigns India Drive and Brain South Africa are actually done jointly in some instances. Then in terms of the people development aspect and the transformation aspect, one charter, one monitoring system for that particular charter throughout, where it becomes a bit of a challenge, and this is where we appreciate the support of the honorable members, is when we have got, there is a standing cabinet decision currently that we should be using graded establishments. And we combine that together with the transformation dimension. But the monitoring suggests that it's not everybody who does it. So you would find that consumption is taking place at the local government level, but still not necessarily in accordance with those particular decisions and so on. Information has gone out, letters were written out and so on, people were informed, but it is really whether that gets carried on and people are actually implementing as per the decision. CETA, one CETA obviously that deals with all of them. Effectiveness is another issue, and those are issues that are seriously getting attention from the department side in terms of making sure that the skills development initiative from the sector side does not necessarily have any weak links, because we have a situation where there's been delays in payments in some instances, and industry in some instances has talked to us and asked what is this and what is that. Even last week we had an industry summit just with the industry itself, and we're looking at post the World Cup, how do they actually get themselves more organized and try and get more business and so on. But the issue of CETA keeps coming up. The rating in terms of skills, we are still rated low globally within the sector. So those are issues that we are mindful of. It is a mandate of national, but of course, we set the framework, and the CETA then implements the framework, and CETA is not necessarily our institution per se. It's got another mandate elsewhere as well. But the fact of the matter is that there is a national tourism skills strategy, and the focus now, even industry has said, the focus should be in implementing specifically that and not a piecemeal approach. And that is what the focus of CETA would then be. The current gaps that we've got, what we have picked up is that where there is no national policy on an issue, there is diverse policy. One province does one thing and the other province does the other and so on. And we cannot blame the provinces when that has been the case. But where we realize that it works for them, surely we cannot go there and change things unnecessarily. But where we realize that there's a need for a direct policy pronouncement at a national level, minister will then do so. A typical example would be if we talk registration. There's voluntary here, there's mandatory there, voluntary there, mandatory there. And those are within the same country. So we need to find ways of actually harmonizing this and making sure that there is proper integration and alignment. The budget structure issue. We had long deliberations with National Treasury on this. We've got a national tourism sector strategy on the side. Now, our budget structure should talk to the whole strategy, because without that, we will not be able to implement such. But if you're talking about a provincial department, it would probably have environment, agriculture, economic affairs, and it's a whole suite of departments. Sometimes the mandates interact within the different functions. Now, if we were to say there must be this for tourism specifically, it becomes quite difficult when we go to the provincial level, because they don't necessarily have just specifically dedicated tourism department. There's no issue of this for tourism per se. So that really still is a little bit of a challenge. But we are saying, regardless, Treasury, let's go ahead with this particular budget structure so that you know exactly, is this for product development and they have put money into product development, it will be easier to trace that. It will be easier for us to account back to the members to say this is exactly what we have spent the money for. But without that, we will only be able to do that at the national. And what would have happened in the provinces would have been different, and it would depend on what would have emerged as a major priority at any given instant. We don't have a tourism cluster at a national level now, which is why we've been using the bilateral approach. The challenge with this is that if we're talking about MINMEC, and largely at the technical level, we're talking about MINMEC, it's talking to ourselves, because we are talking to the same colleagues within the province. And we are just bringing exactly the same stories that we have got on the other side, and they are bringing the stories they have got on the other side, and we agree on this thing. But we are so dependent on the others. We are dependent on transport. We are dependent on DGI. All this that we are on environment and so on. All this that we are dependent on, we need to come together in a clustered manner so that we are able to then agree right there and then to say, if you are going to actually provide a lift capacity to country X, yes, it's because we have agreed that this is the potential we see with that particular country. But it is done within a space where we are able to deliberate and agree at that point. But currently, we don't have that kind of formation. What we have proposed in the national sector strategy is a broader stakeholder, intergovernmental and stakeholder relations framework. Which allows for the business formation to meet, discuss their own issues, government broadly to meet, discuss the issues, the communications people, media and so on, to discuss their own issues. What are the other two pillars called?
The
Economic
Development
Council. The non-governmental, the communities and so on. So that we are then able, and they then converge into one. And we are able to then bring this discussion type forum where the decisions that government has made in terms of specific things are then bounced with in a setting where everybody is able. Part of bringing the media into this is to make sure that as we go forward, we don't do these communications of an issue there, an issue there. There is a broader programmatic approach which allows us to say, media, from now for the next 5 years, these are the things that we're going to be focusing on. Now, when the report comes, it comes with the understanding of the other things that are still in the pipeline linked to these other things. So we are trying to actually build a much more robust relationship, if I want to put it that way, which will allow for government and the media and the industry to consistently be able to get the people informed about the development. The domestic tourism thing, the lag, it's still a challenge. We currently have a campaign, and we don't necessarily call that campaign a strategy because it's a campaign and it's targeted at a particular segmentation. At the moment, we will say it focuses almost slightly on the upper middle class. There's an argument that has been advanced very clearly to say that there's been a serious emergence of the middle class. And these are quite serious numbers. Do we know them as consumers? Do we understand them as consumers? What are we going to offer to them? What sort of packages are out there? What role do sports associations play in terms of actually stimulating the market itself? What role do school sports, for instance, play in terms of stimulating the market? School trips, for instance, there is a focus, a dedicated focus this year on the domestic tourism strategy, and all the provinces are on board. The focus, though, is to make sure that ultimately the domestic leg becomes the more of the contributor than the international. Without necessarily reducing the international numbers, but we are saying
the current situation where you've got 52% is actually international, and you've got 48% that is domestic. It can't be. It will not work. All the other markets that have actually sustained themselves over the period have actually had it the other way around. Some of them go as far as 90%. The U.S. goes that high. If you go to China, it goes that high. And it says that for us to sustain the industry, the domestic part leg of this must be strengthened. Although this is not linked to today's presentation, the regional aspect also is something we are looking at, because we do believe that there's a very close interrelationship, both in terms of a person who buys a package and is not interested in knowing whether this is South Africa, this is Zimbabwe, this is Botswana, but simply wants the package that will be able to take the person around the SADC region and so on and so forth, but also the market that comes from the SADC region, which is a huge market, which we have not necessarily, particularly the air market, we have not tapped much into it, and that we must try and get a lot more from. National registers, this is the focus that we are on, and we are looking at products, we are looking at information centers, operators and so on, all the different categories. And there will most definitely be some pronouncements around this during the budget vote. The participation in the incentive scheme, National Department of Tourism was not necessarily part of it at DTI. Now, it means some of the decisions were purely transactional. So there is a need for us to actually say, look, this is what the strategy is saying. This is the agenda. This is where the gaps are in terms of products and so on. And if you're actually going to advance money and so on, it should focus on those areas that already are there, showing potential, and you will be able to make some yield. We have had a discussion with the colleagues about this, and we should be able to resolve it. The impact of the bylaws, what I talked about, we obviously would not have any direct role. The people that live in that particular municipality, as I say, in terms of the bylaws that come out of that particular municipality, but in terms of the impact of such on tourism, be it favorable or not, the most we can do is simply to do an audit of bylaws that have got an impact and communicate this to the various provincial departments to then take up with the various municipalities. And the awareness about tourism. The key issue here is that for people to decide to travel, particularly for leisure purposes, we must inculcate that culture. They must understand the value of travel. But if we haven't done that and make people aware, it's almost like teaching people to travel for leisure purposes. And it starts, that's why I was mentioning the school aspect when I was talking about domestic tourism. We must inculcate this as much earlier as possible as well. And there's going to have to be a lot of work to be done also with education. In the initial presentation of the NTSS, these were some of the issues that were even raised by Minister of Education. And they were saying the kids would want to go to places even for educational purposes. And if we are talking about the kids that are actually doing history at school, they you can take them to all sorts of places to be able to actually understand this better. But at the end of it, it's people that are actually working in those facilities that they will be visiting that will be able to benefit in terms of jobs and livelihood as well. Way forward, we will be implementing the NTSS. And of course, consideration of policy, strategy, planning, and budget cases alluded to. And we must strengthen the relationship further, particularly the direct relationship. We do see, I mean, Sauda also agrees, we had a discussion. We do see their role very clear. We know it is coordination and so on. But we also see the direct interaction between the department and the municipalities, because we can't say, it's the same Falga that must take Trade and Industries Day, same Falga that must take tourism there, environment there, and so on. So we have a responsibility to get our hands a little bit dirty as well in terms of this. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Thank you.
Thanks. DG? Some members are complaining about the temperature. We'll try and do something about it. It's time for questions. Anat has been presented. I'll take down the names. Honorable Nguni. Honorable Van Linyang. Okay, Zales will break the ice. It will Honorable Sinclair. It will be warmer after that. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question, Chairperson, is on the issue of trying to promote tourism. Local. That is about 90% in the U.S. It's local people who are supporting the tourism industry. Now, has there any research been done in South Africa? Now, seeing from the history where you're coming from, and seeing that the majority of people in South Africa are African, of which, if you look at their LSM level, they might not be able to even to afford, you know, to. From here to perhaps to just to tour in the N2 or the garden route. How viable is that a notion in South Africa? My second point, Chairperson, is on the issue of small areas where you might have valuable historical information or geologically or any environmentally interesting features. Why don't you find that the area is so small that economically they are unable to market that particular feature or interest area? As a department, is the department planning perhaps to do research for the area and try to promote it? Because according to your tourism policy, you fund places where tourism is actually more viable. I think they are finding formulas that is commensurate to the what is generated by that area. Say, for instance, how they get more money for tourism or for development than, say, Free State or Northern Cape because of the amount of tourists that are going to that area. Have you perhaps looking to that those areas where there are tourist affairs or there might be tourist affecting issues, and then you research the area as national and then try to promote that. My second point, the third point, Chairperson, is on the issue of the DGC has mentioned that when they admit MEC, it's only them as tourism departments from provinces and so forth. Now they sit and discuss on the issues. There's no trade industry that is there, there's no transport that is there. Of which when you go and tour, you go on the roads, there are a lot of potholes, some areas there are no bridges, like it's raining now, people are getting stuck somewhere. Isn't that perhaps the silo approach that has been there long ago in the department, in such a way that you don't know what other hand is doing? What's the strategy now as you move forward? That you perhaps you could include all the departments, and when you go down to a province, go down to a local level, you give them a full package of what is the strategy going forward. And on the national policy, you mentioned that some people are registered, some they don't register. Isn't perhaps long overdue that you've got a initial framework that will compel or make it mandatory for registration of local tourist agents or for safety purposes, for more coordination. When they, for example, when you look at the issue of the just what happened in the Western Cape, the Tijuana issue, were those people registered or not? Thanks.
Vaughan Lingan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was in yesterday's paper, a very interesting article on the market indicators in tourism. I don't know what you call it, basis points or something, where with the World Cup it was 111, and now with the first quarter it's down to 89 points. This policy that you want to work on, how are you going to keep this at a reasonable level? What is your growth target or whatever you want to call it? Then you mention on, I see your slides aren't numbered, so it's difficult, research and information, where you refer to national provincial registers, and you say you click on a district municipality's website. Now, you know, funding follows function. So district municipalities do not have an income anymore unless it is grant specific. So what is happening in district municipalities who do not have funding for this purpose? Do you help them as a national or then provincial government? And how can we prevent that this whole thing falls flat when district governments are done away with? It doesn't help us say, oh dear, but we, you know, there are rumors that the district governments might fall away. Then you were talking in the following slide and further on in the presentation about the different clusters. Now, you know, and you were talking about local government, and I think we must include transport, the Department of Transport, in your clusters, because there are certain areas in the country which is absolutely beautiful, but the roads are so terrible you can't ride there. Then I want to know, why must municipalities be consulted via SELGA by the National Department of Tourism? I really do not see the reason for that, because it's just an extra layer, and a person or a group or a layer who needs more time to deliver or get things done. Then your expanded public works program, I can remember when the minister addressed us in one of these lovely expensive centers, we were talking about the expanded public works program, and I want to know what projects you do and how it works, so that it can be utilized, and on what levels? Is it being used in local government level, or is it just in terms of, are we just talking about it at the moment? And then you talk about local government that's in charge of licensing of businesses. There are so many accommodation establishments that start up in local government. And there's this particular government or municipality charges so much per square meter that a new incomer must pay. And the next one, so much. And the next one says, I'm not going to pay that, the next accommodation establishment. And he just opens a business and he puts a sign up and he doesn't comply with anything, whereas the one that registers with the municipality is the legal one and tries to get grading and that sort of thing. But there's no will on the other side by the municipality to sort that out or the signage. And the Department of Roads often has a role to play with the signage as well. And I think, sir, that is my little bit for the time being. Thank you.
Hello, Sinclair.
Well, sorry, there's one more.
Okay.
What is your relationship between the Department of Tourism and Sandparks? Because there seems to be a marriage, and in how many provinces do we have it, And how's your marriage going? Thank you.
That's a nice one. If you talk of a marriage, another Sinclair.
I think that the Director General wasn't here when I raised the issue of the Lakeshore Initiative as a request. But I think what we're trying to discuss and the department trying to convey and trying to achieve is exactly the problem that led to the situation where the Lakeshore Initiative is currently. In terms of the integration between the various ways of government. Now, I still maintain that that project has got a lot of potential, but because of this bureaucratic processes and ring fencing of responsibilities and gatekeeping of districts, that wonderful project is not getting off the ground. And if this NTWS wants to or can achieve that, I think it would be wonderful. The second remark that I want to make is the issue about the internal tourism in South Africa. I don't think in our lifetime we will have the opportunity to see an event like the World Cup again and the influx of tourists to our country. Maybe if Durban get the Olympic Games, but that will be very localized in terms of exposure and so on. So we need to develop the internal market. But the internal market for me is not necessarily people that have never been to the sea, coming to the sea. The internal market starts in your own environment. If I can use Kimberley as a typical example, the biggest tourist attraction there is the Big Hole, but many of the people in and around Kimberley has never been to the Big Hole as a tourist attraction. The same, for instance, with the Ugrabis waterfalls and so on. There's a million ideas, possibilities regarding that. So, for me, tourism must play a bigger role in the local government setup. But unfortunately, in local government, the tourism official sometimes it's just been somebody there to fill a position or been deployed by that other organization that I forgot the name now, but it's not a necessity. And I think it's necessary that from this perspective, the local tourism market mustn't be just an South African market, but more a localized market in the environment where people live and survive on a daily basis. So for me, it's a very important initiative. But the other issue there is we must also make it easier for the tourism enterprises to do their daily activities. And I'm just concerned that through all these processes, the MINMEX and this liaison committee and that one, that we're creating an enormous bureaucracy. That you pass the decision-making process from the one to the other, to the other, to the other, and we don't move on the real issue. So please keep it as straight and simple as possible to do business also in this environment. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable May.
Thank you very much, sir. Chairperson, in the presentation, the DDC tells us that in terms of skill development, if I hadn't was, we are right at the lowest. So if I did not hear well, I wanted to ask the DDC, if we are rated the lowest, what is it that you are doing to improve on this particular matter? Now, the other thing I want to talk to the chairperson is the issue of the transformation of the tourism sector itself in terms of ownership. how far are we? Because I see here, if a presentation says implementation of the tourism target sector, for me it is very sad, because I would need details. But in terms of transformation of the sector itself, how far are we? But the other thing, Chairperson, that we have raised previously is the issue of branding or marketing. That in my view, the marketing or the branding, there's this tendency to focus on big towns and leave out this small towns. For instance, where I come from, Dau, people all over want to see the scar, but the scar is in my routine. It's not based where it should be. In Buxton, that remains a challenge. So I would want clarity on this one, sir. I'm raising this issue so that the Congress of the People does not have an opportunity to reorganize itself with this issue, because they have problems. So as the ANC, you must from the onset raised them, because they are now very opportunity, they want to use everything. Thank you, sir.
Let me put on my question so that I deal with them one time. A comment is that the department is now, as you've said, a standalone. I think we should be making efforts that we push for this in provinces and in municipalities, that even if it's a line just dedicated to that, whether with the DDG in that province or chief director, what have you, but, you know, should stand alone. One, because tourism is one of the now drivers of job creation. So it's one sector that has been identified even by research that this one can create jobs. So I think we need to be doing something more. On the issue, on your presentation, you talked about the growth path and IPAP. I wanted to get clarity whether you mean IPAP 2 or IPAP. Thirdly, recently I've noticed in KwaZulu-Natal that there are signages that are up that direct people to Nazareth Church or Washende. Is this really, are they having an impact? Is there any benefit for tourists? Are tourists, you know, visiting these sites? You touched on the DTI funds. They are always not fully utilized. What could be the reason? Is the department not tapping into that, or are they not talking to each other much? I remember in the last financial year, there was 800 million that was not utilized for tourism. On the issue of grading, I once received as a chair a complaint that even government departments are not utilizing graded facilities, and would want to investigate this as a committee, and not taking note also of that government memo that you talked about. Do you relate this to government departments? Share this information that we are required to utilize graded facilities only. You did say you only meet as a tourism cluster, but then you also meet as an economic cluster where you'll find all these departments, transport, what have you, as an economic cluster. You don't you share the things raised in the tourism cluster, in the economic cluster. The other one is about the regional markets. I'll I would need some more meat on that. They had demand that even necessitated that we cancel some SAA flights into the region. So the lost flights now, Cape Town, Devon, and the information we got was that they were deployed into the regional markets. If it's really picking up, maybe you can send us even figures, because as people from KwaZulu-Natal, we're going to take this thing up. It's affecting our tourists. It's affecting our economic growth. We've recently built a stadium and everything, and then the flights are closed. The other issue is the breakdown of tourists. If you've got your own sports tourists, cultural, history, those that deal with history, business, entertainment, if you have a plan, if you look at the countries, you know, those that want to deal with archaeology, education, they could go to this area, want to have a look at the big hole. Those that want to do Formula One, they can also go to the Northern Cape. All such things. Do you have a plan as a department? And then you come then to the last one of the local tourists, that you have a spreadsheet. Not only Soweto, not only the Hector Peterson Memorial, not only Mapungubwe, that per province, you would say, just send this information about places where people can go and visit. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will give the first attempt, and then colleagues will come in and then provide additional information on some of these things. The question from Honorable Nguni regarding the silo approach. Actually, let me see the comment. It's indeed correct, but I will link it with the question about the clusters and whether there is no discussion with those clusters. There is discussion at the cluster level. Firstly, I must confirm that, yes, the silo approach does perpetuate from time to time. At the cluster level, a discussion on all these issues, but they will not necessarily allow a deliberate discussion on tourism specific to allow it to be exhausted in favor of tourism. So they will be looking at the ultimate integration. And as such, these are meetings that will take place 3 hours, 4 hours, once, twice a month or so, and at DG's level. So it wouldn't necessarily, one or two gains we'll make, but it wouldn't necessarily go into the thorough details of each aspect of our sector. So we are saying that, and it's linked to the questions that were also raised by Honorable Fanningen, if we were to take the approach that says bring in transport from the very beginning, not later, bring in DTI from the very beginning, not later, all this, bring in Home Affairs, bring in Statistics South Africa and so on, which is the approach that I was talking about, the solution to that which we are proposing is that we have that broader government cluster type arrangement where we discuss all these issues. If transport says this cannot be done, they are saying it to everybody else, but we are showing the figures to say this is what it is likely going to bring if it was done in this particular way. And the counter argument must then outweigh the arguments that we will be presenting before them. But if we are doing it at a cluster level, it becomes very pertinent because
energy will be sitting there as well, trying to drive their issues. Communications will be sitting there driving their issues, and so on and so forth. So when it gets there, and we have already at a very technical level agreed that this is at least the minimum that we will be able to recommend, when it gets there, it's easier to then get it into cabinet, and it will be something that we can push through. And the people that will advise these director generals, and they will advise the ministers, they would have had a very clear technical understanding of what were the real issues that supported the particular motivation. The aspect of whether there has been research, Honorable Mguni, to find out whether the demographics of South Africa in any way have an implication in terms of the decision for people to travel and the challenges that people experience and so on. There is an indication that about 2 million middle class emerged since 1994. Out of that, obviously, we're talking about people that work in industries, people that work in government, academia, and so on and so forth. Vast demographics. But also, with the understanding that at that particular point in time, there were other instruments that came from the side of labor that addressed part of the demographic issues and so on. So it's not quite the income demographic disparities and so on. It's a choice that consciously people make whether to go to the next stadium and watch soccer or to take the next trip and see the big one, and where the value could be. There are people who, on a weekend basis, would spend significant amounts of money entertaining friends, but it's the way that they want to actually enjoy themselves. And these are people that, if targeted accordingly, could then be part of that particular market we're talking about. There are stock fells, for instance. I'll give an example of a stock fell up in Limpopo. These ladies, they come down to Cape Town, they go to Durban, they alternate on an annual basis. And I'm told there are many others that would want to do that. But there is no local shop right there, or Pick and Pay, where they can actually access these tickets and so on. So they've got to facilitate these tickets through their children that live in the bigger cities and so on. It's a bit cumbersome. But what we are saying is that there's a lot more market for domestic. It does exist. And I'm taking the point that was made by Honorable Sinclair as well, that we need to make it very local as well. There's provincial parks. People live next to those very provincial parks, but some of them have never visited these parks. But it's how do we get people to realize that there is value in travel? And that is the biggest challenge that we've got right now, to make sure that the understanding of travel broadly. We were looking at, there's a hotel, I'm not necessarily going to mention brands. There's a hotel that was opened in Soweto. Interestingly, the biggest business for that hotel is funerals. And people come from everywhere. Every weekend it's occupied because it's a funeral. For them it's tourism, because there is business that is actually coming from time to time. But the point I'm trying to make, and even most of the people that work in Johannesburg, Pretoria, some in Cape Town, some in Durban, they are migrant workers. These migrant workers, they go home. And when they get home, what do we do? Just go to the local store, buy a few foodstuffs, and spend the rest of the time actually at home. But if there are specific products that have gone into those specific places, be it an event, a festival, that would then integrate people and bring those people into this particular event and so on, there's such a huge change. And these events that have taken place over the years but were never brought into the commercial periphery.
people that go to, there's this fist fight. It was on one of the television stations. It attracts more than 30,000 people that over a period of a week. Now, some entrepreneurs have now seen that this thing is viable. They go there and they brine it and they cook a bit of pasty and some gravy, and they're making a lot of money out of that. But it requires proper facilities. It could actually then become something that attracts a whole lot more people. And this is real unique indigenous aspects and so on. It talks to what Honorable Mguni was saying, that there are things that are happening in certain areas within our country that are significant but not necessarily recognized. So we are looking at those things. But there is also a dimension that says it needs to be supported fully. So there has got to be the necessary infrastructure. We must make the case. And we should be able to say when we bring it in terms of marketing, it is something that ultimately people would want to come here for. How unique is it really compared to what others might be offering just next door? So we need to look at those dynamics. But those things we do look at, which is why some of the products, like what Honorable Mano was saying, if we were to look at the down car, there's uniqueness in that. And that's why it's something that gets to be supported and so on. But Honorable Mano, if you would allow me, I shouldn't perhaps answer the question specifically about the location, because it was not a national issue directly. Honorable Chair, if you would allow, in terms of where the skull gets to be located specifically. Because I think along the lines, there's definitely some issues with regards to heritage aspect and so on. And the people that deal with the heritage mandate can then be able to address that particular aspect. Can we take a rhino, a golden rhino from Akungubia and put it at an investing tutorial, or should it be there and so on? But we, once it's sorted, we market, and we'll make sure people know where it is, and people then come to that particular place. And where it is, we'll then promote the area to say, by the way, if you're coming to this particular area, these are the things you're going to be able to see, so you can come and invest in this particular space. Should we be going through SALGA? Honorable Chair, it's yes, but not a blanket yes. SALGA has the infrastructure legally, has the infrastructure to be able to draw municipalities as a voice. Now, if we're having a national plan, we will welcome the individual inputs into the plan. But at the same time, the integrated input would also be feasible to say, this is what municipalities are saying. Of course, it depends on the level of coordination that is actually there. In terms of their capacity, they have told us they don't have sufficient capacity to deal with tourism, which is why in my presentation I did make mention that tourism would like to get our municipalities. But at the same time, we wouldn't want to say South Africa must be pushed down. Because we do recognize that there are times that we will need them to be able to access certain conversations to know some of the people that are there. Because we will not see the 200-something people, there are many. Ultimately, we would want to hear what is emerging as a consensus voice of the municipality, let us see the individual ones. Because in the end, we should be able to say, this decision was taken, but we weighed it against what has come through. But I would say maybe it's about functionality in the end. But structure itself would have been very useful in terms of getting to the municipalities, in terms of coordination. The SRP program, what does it fund? It funds projects that would generate jobs that are that meets the basic minimum requirements for expanded public works programs. But those projects must be tourism core. It may be that a community somewhere
would be wanting to create walking trails to a particular attraction, or they want an information center, or they want a particular establishment and so on. Now, there are other issues pertinent to this that relate to who then applies. We are saying that this should come through the municipality. And that way we know that these things would have gone through the IDP, have been agreed upon, that these are things that are going to be pushed by this particular municipality specifically. Of course, we have had some challenges in the past, but those we are addressing in terms of ultimately the ownership and so on. And we are saying, if you've got a municipality then taking ownership of that particular facility, and you've got an agreement with them in terms of maintenance going forward and so on and so forth, then it actually works. But what we don't do is strictly, it doesn't go into private. Once it is, if it is, say, for instance, it was a lodge or something like that, it doesn't go into private. The compliance issues, the license and the, those kind of models. It's an issue that I do believe requires other authorities. The reason why I'm saying so is because if there is a requirement in a particular local authority that everyone doing business there should be registered or licensed by them, and somebody goes and does something that is not in line with that, they're breaking the law. And I do believe that if somebody is breaking the law, then there must be consequences for that. But it then goes back to, should we then go for mandatory or voluntary? I think both of them have got their pros and their cons. If we go for mandatory, a typical example would be, what do we do with people that are actually not in full compliance with the national one? This is a person who has registered with DTI, that's my problem. Same person has registered with SARS, has registered because of the size of the subject, registered with labor, and has then registered or licensed by the municipality, paying rates and taxes municipality. And we come and we say, you register with us or else. Now, the question is, as tourism, if we do something like that, and this is just a debate, if we do something like that, would we be able to actually enforce it? Do we have sufficient, because once it comes here, as honorable members, you have recommended it to the president that he has signed it, it's law. And anyone who breaks the law, the police must then come. Do we have the capacity as a country to be able to go for that kind of law? Do we have that much of a problem that we should be going that kind of law? These are the questions we are grappling with ourselves as well. And we look at the database, and when we look at the database, we see that the database has got about 20,000 or so establishments. People have come on board, and so on and so forth. And if we've got those penalties there, how are we going to invoke those penalties? So these questions we must really answer. We must be honest to ourselves. And if we're going to have this punitive approach throughout, because that's why I tried to outline what other registrations already are there. If we were to say that every license that was issued by the municipality, please just write it on a piece of paper, send us that information. We capture it on the national database, we have got the coordinates and so on. We go and verify that those actually are there and they exist, and the status in terms of grading and other things is correct. Then we have got the information that we require. So these questions we are really seriously debating our budget internally to say, ultimately, the decision that must come out of this must be so informed and must be forward-looking and must also take the interest of the country overall in heart. But those are policy pronouncements. I will make them. I'm just saying these are debates that are taking place. The sand tax issue. It's a customary marriage. It's not a
The reason why I'm saying this is because we, CENTAS is an entity of the Department of Environmental Affairs. With its accounting, with the Minister of Water and Environment being the responsible minister for the entity. The reason for that is because CENTAS is a conservation agency that uses tourism as a conservation strategy. Now, what we do, CENTAS is a standing member of MIDTEC. MIDTEC is the technical one, just below the MINMEC. There is Glenn Phillips from CENTAS, who is their general manager responsible for all the tourism facilities in all the parks. He sits on that committee and all the other subcommittees. So when we talk about the National Tourism Strategy, he was part of that from the beginning till the end. Even in the expert panel, he was in there. Now, our expectation from CENTAS is if they're graded at a particular level, they live up to the grade. That's the relationship. The issues of accessibility, for instance, if we're talking about universal access and so on, those types of issues, we'll talk to them and make sure that those things are done. But to us, they are a hotel group, if we were to put from a tourism perspective. And what applies to every other applies also to them. But I must say it's one of the best. It's one of the best they've got, and most of the people that start traveling, the incoming, starting to come into the market, they actually start with those and then mature into other products as well. But we have a very good relationship, a very, very good relationship. It becomes difficult, obviously, when, for instance, we would want the similar things that are happening in the, and this being the Select Committee, would want similar things that are happening in St. Parks to also happen in the provincial parks. Because we do believe that the provincial parks will unlock this domestic market that we're talking about. There are many, they've got facilities, just need to be upgraded and so on, and that could be a good entry point for a huge, huge market. Honorable Sinclair, the cross-border issues and the technicalities and so on, it's a difficult one for us to specifically, but we do know the issues that are coming out of this. It's probably a cocktail kind of discussion in terms of all these initiatives that would have that kind of element. How do we deal with these kind of things? But, of course, we have interest of tourism within that, and it probably should be something that particular committee should start discussing as well among the honorable members and colleagues. The last issue, the structures, the MINMEX, they are legislated. But the purpose of it is that things should not just be left to their own means. There should be a deliberate effort to make sure that kind of integration does take place. Now, if I was to what I would say is that it's a policy structure, so that there is a lot more harmonization of policy and there's a lot more alignment. And that becomes the only platform, because if we don't have that platform, the pronouncement, because of the concurrence of the mandate, pronouncement at national and there's a pronouncement at provincial, and the two don't necessarily talk to one another, then we would have some challenges. But I do agree, too many meetings, then we obviously would not necessarily have sufficient time to function. But those the MINMEX are quite necessary in terms of that integration. What I will mean, Honorable Chair, through you, the issue of skills, we are not rated necessarily the lowest. Judge, have you got the... You don't have the actual figure here. But it's low, significantly low. There are good things that we are rated. For instance, car rentals, we are rated number one in the world. So there are some good things. But when it comes to issues of skills and so on, there is a process that we went through to develop the National Tourism Skills Strategy. That document is in place. It is the only document that is being used to inform what skills we should be developing within the sector. Private sector, I must say, has come on board in terms of actually dedicating resources to be able to train people. But there are also other initiatives on the line. We do take people for hotel training. We do take people, for instance, in this weekend or next weekend, if I'm not mistaken, next weekend or this weekend, there will be an advert for training of chefs. So there are specific areas that have been identified, and those areas are targeted one by one. And it's going to be a six-month training. People are going to be there for a significant duration of time, 6 months, day after day, actually focusing on how you actually develop your skills as a chef. That is very important. And this is coming from industry, for the process of the development of that skill strategy, that this is where the real gaps are, and they've identified them. And those gaps must then be closed. But there is a lot of initiatives that are being taken, including actually the aspect of getting learners to understand what actually tourism is. So when they make that decision, it's a conscious decision. I don't know if honorable members did note Minister day before yesterday had an outreach with the colleges that actually offer tourism, and he was actually demonstrating what the opportunities within this. They even went to the one and only on a tour. What are these opportunities? What actually happens in tourism? What does it mean to work within the tourism sector? What are the different available opportunities and so on and so forth? But what skills do you actually require? And those are also saying, our doors are open, you can actually come into this, and this is how you get.
Okay.
The branding and marketing. There's one brand for the country overall. Now, that's a marketing committee that I was talking about, the subcommittee of MINMEC. That's where they do the integration. So that's where, Honorable Main, you would have your representatives from Northwest that would then say, this brand that you're taking actually makes a lot more sense. I must say, from a privileged position of having seen some of this material, interestingly, there is a lot that actually goes in there that actually depicts the country in a much broader manner, where you can actually see almost all the different provinces. But these are flighted also, not in our country. They are flighted where we want people to come here. So maybe SAT could actually demonstrate what goes into the content of this particular thing to the members. Religious tourism, Honorable Chair, it's a niche. There are some challenges. For instance, there are certain things that, according to the tradition of particular religious group, may not be done. So one cannot go and put a hotel up there at the mountain, and those types of things. So even if it was going to be marketed, it still would not. So the direction largely really serve to get people to the right place. There is a bit of money that gets to be made out of this, but they are difficult to commercialize, very, very difficult to commercialize, and they are highly organized, not easy to really penetrate into that. And if we look at the major religious groups that have got numbers during Easter or during Christmas or during September, all of them, there's a certain tradition, and people would stay in one place and so on, specific suppliers and so on. But it's we still need them to get there properly. By the time they get there, these people would have used our filling stations, they would have bought food along the road and so on. So there is something that filters into the economy. But in the main, to say, put it as tourism, is a bit of a difficult one. And some of them, non-members would not necessarily be allowed access unless certain arrangements were done prior. The segmentation of tourists, Honorable Chair, you have already done it. you went through the whole list of categories. But yes, we do have. The main focus of SAT previously was on the leisure tourism side. With time, we brought in meetings and incentives and a bit of events. But you would recall, Minister did make an indication that he would want a dedicated focus also on convention and it's the recognition of the other leg in terms of business tourism that we should also, but we focus on all of them. And when we go out there, we market South Africa as a holistic destination. And then people can then pick and choose, but people get a sense that it's a country rich in history, rich in culture, and so on and so forth. Government departments not utilizing greatest facilities. Honorable Chair, I think this is something that the House can really assist us with. We got the cabinet decision, got communicated, but it becomes the ultimate decision of the person who has been given budget responsibility to sign and say, I'm going to use this one instead of that one. And it's not an easy thing to police from our side. It's policing without teeth, basically. Because we can just say, well, there's compliance or there's non-compliance. But the consequences thereof, we will not be able to enforce. Colleagues?
Thank you, DG. Just to comment on the issue of what is it that we are doing to improve the skills. I think the effectiveness of that in but also the fact that we really trying as much as possible to the digital tourism human resource strategy. But the most important thing is to really focus on digital effectiveness to ensure that it is demonstrated. But also the last comment that as much as you can do much in the department, some of these areas that we are looking at depend entirely or much on the capacity of the provincial representative that you put into place and the pool that you put in this place. We need to also look at that because much as you can do as much as possible, if we don't focus on the people that are being put in terms of the officials that are put in place, improving the municipalities, that has an impact on the outcome.
Thank you, Shem. Just want to add a few things with regard to tourism potential in municipalities. We have included in the National Tourism Sector Strategy an objective that would look at local tourism development. So that would make sure that we focus and we have specific targets to achieve as far as assisting local government to grow tourism. And in the front of these legislation, and the same applies with figures like in the strategy, we also have an action that says we'll inquire on the best way that we can bring a national framework so that we sort of align and harmonize existing frameworks or processes that are across provinces in terms of registration of tourism amenities. And I also want to highlight the issue of localized tourism, that there's also a specific objective on the culture of tourism in the country, that we want to entrench a culture of tourism so that we create awareness where people value tourism or they understand the value of tourism and they also have a culture of welcoming attitude. And as far as transformation of the sector is concerned, the department is currently conducting a study on transformation. So in the next 2 months, it will be completed, so we'll be able to assess what is the state of transformation on the sector. And the issue of having marketing or branding being biased to big towns is, in the strategy, we're also looking at making sure that rural tourism is addressed. So those are the kind of measures that we're putting in place to direct the department, the national department, in making sure that all the gaps that are existing are addressed. The last thing that I want to raise is that broadly the NTS is trying to elevate the tourism aspect, you know, the tourism aspect of the tourism economy, so that we're able to account for it at the level of where we talk about tourism satellite account. So if you look at the tourism strategy, it's trying to tap on all elements that are within our control and those that are not within our control, so that efforts are consolidated and we're able to account on the tourism economy. Thank you.
Is there any other follow-up on our members, on our Sinclair?
Okay, I just want to link on the one issue that you raised in terms of the internal transport system in South Africa. Given the fact that, to my understanding, this debate is not just about sectors in government, it's necessary that the powers that be, the minister and the senior officials and so on, must certainly engage the whole debate about air transport and passenger transport in South Africa. You raised it in terms of Cape Town, Durban, what's his name, Ruth, I think. But if we want to achieve those noble objectives of which you are specifying, we need to address that issue of about making air transport more accessible for the ordinary person. A ticket from Cape Town to Kimberley, return ticket, sometimes costs almost as much as a ticket from Cape Town to London. And at the end of the day, when there's a deficit of R1 billion, those people run to Parliament and come back for money. It can't be, then there's something wrong. And I really, say if I can use this opportunity to actually lobby this point to say that we must get SAA and SA Express and SAA Link here to this committee to come and explain why is this tariff so high. Sometimes they say, no, it's about the profit margins and this and that and the other. But certainly, the more passengers that you have, the more you can do with the product that you offer. It seems to me, for them, price is the only criteria that matters. So, Chairperson, if I can lobby that point and also engage the department to use the influence that they've got to seriously address this issue.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Regarding the training for the chef's 6-month course,
Will they be available in all provinces, and how many opportunities would be created for learners to benefit from this? Thank you.
Still on chairs. I say most chairs in South Africa are not from South Africa. On the training, not even in chefs, even people that work in hotels. So on these trainings, I specific about training South Africans. And I'm not sure whether this fits into you, but I think it does. There were applications that were sent, I think, for expanded public rights program by communities, as explained. I remember the community of Mbonambi, Juanas in Tuva, and also Sandisha. Why do we do follow up on these things? Because they said they were handed over in the province. They said they were handed over in the national department.
Honorable Chair, I will request the relevant DDG to come back to you on the SRPP projects. But the normal process is that once the applications have come through, there's an evaluation, and they look at all other factors, jobs that are going to be created, sustainability of the project beyond the time that is just going to be done, and so on. But I will request the relevant DDG to come back to you in terms of the specifics. Honorable Adams, I think it's 200 or so. I'll check the. But it's a national program. So it means those people will be from everywhere in the country. Obviously, they will be centralized at one place. And the facilities for training of that nature will determine such a facility. It's likely that it's going to be in Johannesburg. Then, Honorable Sinclair, questions, in fact, it's remarks. We share 100% the sentiment. Not just domestic, but also the international airlines. Without talking about the FAA aspect specific, we are told, because we have had numerous discussions with the Department of Transport on this one, we are told that in the country, domestically, there is no restriction. If Paki has got the money tomorrow, he can go and get a license and operate tomorrow. So there is seemingly an issue with regards to the investment to be made, which is probably the reason why in some routes it's only the national carrier that flies. I don't know whether it's got anything to do with the economies of scale. And, of course, it goes back to the debate about whether is it a national carrier or is it a flag carrier and so on and so forth. But we would want to see as much capacity as possible on all the routes, not just the Golden Route, which I must say is doing very well, but on all the routes. If we're talking about international as well, one can honestly argue that places like Nelson Mandela Bay can actually become an international hub if there is sufficient movement in terms of airlines and so on. But for us, the stance is that we want a lot more capacity on all the routes. And that is what we take to the table. And ultimately, obviously, a decision has to be taken. Transport remains the regulator on transport-related matters. But if we had that cluster type, we would give you clear answers
say that, well, this is the answer we've got now. This is where it is. But it becomes, by the way, at the same meeting, we would want to discuss the DTI schemes. We would want, it becomes a bit cumbersome. But we share the same sentiments, and we would really want more and more capacity. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chair, my apologies. They all the chairs trained to be trained are South African. It's South African youth, basically.
Any other comment, question? Looks like we have exhausted. I want to thank you very much, DDG and your team, for coming. And to the members, to stress that we hope we are going to have a good year. It is a very dicey year, you know, a year that has got elections. Always disturbs committee work and makes party members to be vibrant in committee work and all that. That I think we should pull off. I think we'll get time to do our political work. I know it's quite difficult, but we'll do all we can that the committee does its work as it is mandated. Mazambane.
Chairman, I'm not wishing to get into a political debate with you at all, but I'm sorry to take the time. We talked about our program and we agreed to it, but I see that on the 9th of February there's a direct clash with a meeting of the Select Committee on Economic Development. Same time, same date, so I don't know which committee is going to take precedence. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for assisting us on that thing. We'll come back to the members about that. But DDG, thanks very much. And the team, hope to see you once more. We're going to call you on the second term. And when you go out, we're going to inform you. Next week, you're supposed to go to Mpumalanga. It was since cancelled. I will also go to Northwest. So we'll inform the department so that we get the officials, whether from province or national, because we'll be doing oversight on what the departments do. Thanks very much. The meeting stands adjourned.